This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm retired jockey Christina McManigal, joining you tonight from our Lexington, Kentucky studio. And, of course, I would like to thank everyone listening tonight on Sirius 219, XM 206, and also to those of you listening to our website at horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to riders who have given everything to the sport. I was fortunate enough to be able to walk away from my career-ending injuries. Not everyone is so lucky. 60 former jockeys benefit from this nonprofit organization. If you're able to help, please visit the website www.pdjf.org. Our guest this evening, I guess you could call him a ladies man. He got along really well with the fillies. After all, he did ride, in my opinion, the greatest filly our sport has ever seen, the one and only Ruffian. He won the Kentucky Derby with Genuine Risk, one of only 3 fillies to ever win the Derby. He won the Kentucky Oaks with Princess Rooney. And you might recognize a few more names: Foolish Pleasure, General Assembly, Smile, Forgo, just to name a few of the great horses he's guided to victory with 5,338 wins and over $85 million in earnings. Jacinto Vasquez, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So good to have you here today with us, Jacinto. And I know you're a very busy man. Before we went live here on air, you just told me what you've done so far today, and please share that with our listeners.
Okay. I just got through get off 5 horses. I breezed 2 horses and galloped 3.
So you keep busy. You're still very involved with the sport. And how old are you, Jacinto?
73.
That is fantastic that you're still getting on horses every day, and you obviously love it. You don't want to miss out. You want to stay involved.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's good for my health, my exercise and everything. I don't have to go to the gym every day and waste time over there lifting weight or do something, jogging. I gallop horses, I walk them, and I keep busy.
That's
good for my health.
Oh, very, very much so. And do you train your own, Jacinto, or do you work for someone?
I work for somebody. I work for Leroy Jolly right now.
Oh.
I had some horses, but I quit training because I had problems with some of the people that I had. It was too slow pain. So I said, why should I waste my pension money to trying to support somebody else have it? So I quit, and I don't miss it.
Well, you and Leroy Jolly obviously go way back, and we'll get talking about some of those great moments you both shared. And Jacinto, I would like to start off with telling our audience you are from Panama. Is that right?
Yes, I was born in Panama, a place about 75 miles away from the city, a place called Las Tablas.
And how was it growing up there?
I grew up over there. I left there when I was 9 years old. I went through grammar school in 3 years, and after that I thought I was smart, and I left. I left that. I just don't have an ambition to stay in the interior just messing around with cows and cleaning fields for planting rice and in corn. I say it's better. It's another better way to make a living.
Is that what your family did? They planted rice and...
Oh, yeah. We had a big farm.
Okay.
Big farm. We had a lot of pigs, a lot of cows, a lot of chickens. And we all had to work because we had to feed those animals. And everybody had to share.
Did you have horses on the farm?
Oh, yeah. We had plenty of horses.
Is that how you started riding?
Oh, well, I started riding over there. I started riding when I was 5 years old. I could ride any horse.
Oh, wow.
I was too dumb to know any better.
5 years old. That's were they workhorses? Would they plow the fields, or would you ride them?
No, workhorses, cows. You know, you chase the cows and jump fences and everything.
And how did you first where did you get your first experience at the racetrack?
Oh, I got experience through, when I was in the city in Panama, I used to work in a flea market and carrying bags to outside to the people that used to buy stuff, carry the bags outside to the car. And there was a lady that used to work collecting rent for those, for the flea market. She used to collect it. And there was Gustini's mother, Deodoro Gustini's mother. And I had a fight one day over there with a black guy, and I beat the hell out of him, and they trying to put me in jail for that, and she saved my ass. And then she told me I should have been a jockey. She said, I got a son, he's a jockey. I don't know what the hell he was, a jockey. I don't know nothing about races. So finally, I said, okay, take me to the racetrack. So I went to the racetrack with her the following week, and I watched Paesa win 5 races in a row. So I asked him, I said, how much money can a jock make? He said, well, that jock in 5 races in a row, he made about $500, $1,000. I said, well, that easy? I said, I can do that. So I quit the job over there, and I went to the racetrack. 6 months later, I was riding.
6 months later. So you avoided jail, and then you went to the racetrack. I like that. That worked out well. Worked out well. And what did you start out doing at the racetrack, Jacinto?
Oh, I started grooming horses and taking care of the horses like everybody else does. And I did everything, rubbing horses and doing everything around the racetrack. So then I started galloping the horses over there. And 6 months later, I was riding.
How was it different for you to go from riding the workhorses at the farm to going to the racetrack and galloping thoroughbreds?
Well, I used to ride broncos back home. I used to ride wild horses, and I don't have no fear for the horses. You know, I just got on them, and they explained me what to do, and then I went from there. I learned real quick.
And how old were you when you first started working at the racetrack?
15, yes.
And your family, did they have any strong opinions about that?
They don't have no choice. I run away from home. I don't have no choice. They don't have no choice. I was doing whatever I want to do.
So you ran away. So you didn't have any contact with them?
Oh, yeah, I had a contact with them once in a while. I told them one day I want to be a jockey. They don't know what it was to be a jockey. Then it's steady was... ride horses. He said, you can't make any money riding horses. I said, yeah, you can make money riding horses. So, and I started riding over there in February when I was 16. And I rode for a few months, and then I won about 150 races there, and I left. I came to the United States.
Well, you were the leading apprentice in Panama, of course. And how did it come about for you to move to the United States?
Well, Mr. Hooper came over there and had a contract with Braulio Baeza, and he brought him to the United States. And then he trying to give me a contract, but he trying to give me a contract, $50 a week, and 10% of the purse. So I told him, I said, $50 a week. I said, I'm making over here $200 a week, $500 a week. Why should I go over there for $50 a week? That's what I had on the contract in those years. So I refused to sign a contract with him. So then I made my mind and I came to the state on my own.
So you just decided to pack your bags. There were more opportunities in the United States, but not for that particular guy who only wanted to give you $50 a week. But yeah. Where did you go to first? Did you go to the East
New
Coast?
New York.
Okay.
Yeah. I went right for the Big Apple.
Right for the
and
big bus.
The first horse I rode, and they disqualified me.
No. What happened?
Yeah. Oh, I barbecued somebody inside of me, and it went number down.
I didn't like that too much.
New York was a strict, and those years, you do something, and they used to take you down with no problem.
Was that a lot different from Panama?
Well, in Panama, it was the same. I had a lot of problems in Panama, too, with the stewards. They sent me down a lot. So I never put anybody in danger. So I just don't hold no hostage the last quarter of a mile. That's all it was.
So they took your number down first horse you rode there. But after that, it obviously got better. And what did you think of New York? And was it easy for you to transition from living in Panama? Did you speak English?
No, not a word.
Not a word.
Not a word.
How did you learn?
Reading the racing form. I went to school for a while, and then I learned them around the racetrack most of the time.
And then it became easier for you, obviously, to communicate with the trainers and things like that. And how long did it take, Jacinto, for you to really start picking up a lot of business?
Oh, I had a hard time. I left New York and I made a decision to my agent to sign my papers, took me to Arizona. And I went to Arizona, turf paradise. And I rode four, five horses, went three races. And the following day, I rode and one horse went through the fence with me. I broke both my legs and collarbone.
Oh, my goodness. So, just bolted.
No, he just bolted to the inside.
Yeah.
The horse name was Tugon.
Tugon.
He was crazy. I don't know. They put me in a crazy horse. And in those years, I don't know any better. So I spent about 6 months broken down.
Tugon was
then
gone.
And I went to Denver, Colorado. And then I went to Arsor Bean. I rode over there. I rode in Nebraska and a few racetracks. And rode in Denver, Colorado. Then I rode New Mexico. And I rode in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And after that, I went back to Lexington, Kentucky.
Oh, very nice.
And I rode over there at the end of 1961 in Lexington. First horse I rode over there, I won a race. In Lexington.
What did you think of Lexington when you got here?
Oh, it was beautiful country. I went over there and I beat Harriet Carroll on a race. Harriet Carroll finished second. And Eddie came back and said to me, "Say, Jack, if you keep it up like that, the way I rode," he said, "you're going to make it." That's what Eddie said to me.
He was right. He was right. And what did you think of the jockey colony in Kentucky? Who was there?
Oh, there was a lot of good riders over there. There was Willie Carson, Onion, the Cook's brother, Brownfield, Heckman, guy from New Orleans. There was a lot of good riders around there. Riders could do anything on a horse. Anything.
Did you look up to one in particular? Did anyone kind of help you out when you first got here to Kentucky?
The following year, I went to Chicago, and I was riding with Shoemaker in hardtack. And I really put attention to the way Shoemaker was.
Yeah.
I think Shoemaker was the most greatest jock I ever saw. He had everything. He had the head, the hands, patience. He had everything. He could ride a horse in the lead or come from behind. He was all the way around good rider.
And you tried to copy that. You tried to watch him and then...
Well, I watched him, but I had a different style of horses. You know, I was a little bit more rough with the horse. than Shoemaker.
Yeah.
Shoemaker used that technique like romance a beautiful girl. I don't have that.
Well, like I said for the intro, Jinto, you were definitely the ladies' man as far as it went with the Phillies. And let's talk about that. So you got along very well with Phillies. Did you find that was true during your whole career as far as maybe, you know, you're better with the nervous Phillies. You kind of had that confidence to ride those horses.
I used to like to study the horses, and I used to watch horses run, and the way they like to run, they like to what they don't like, they like to, and I find a lot of technicality that you can make a horse run without beat him up, and just tease him, and they give you the best. And they learn how to run the horses. They like to make one run, or how far back, or how you then, how the strategy in the race is very important. And I was very lucky that I rode a lot of good fillies. I rode a filly called Summer Gas, Two Ball. Rode a filly called Princess Rooney, and I rode Christmas Pass. And I rode a lot of other fillies, a sprinter. They're very good fillies. I rode Secretan. I rode a filly called Horrible Miss. She had that filly was a filly that used to had a lot of speed. She used to go to the lead 22-44 and used to stop. Mm. So one day Mr. Wiley put me in a horse. That filly told me, went to the stewards. He said, "I'm going to tell this jock to hold this horse. Take him back out, right out of the gate and hold him to the quarter pole." So the steward say, "Okay." So I ride the filly, and I did exactly what Mr. Wiley told me to do. And she win. She run 3/4 mile in 9.
Wow.
And we find out she just like to come from off the pace. Yeah. And she was a strong filly to take back.
Mm.
She used to fight you all the way. When you get to the 5/16 pole, you turn her loose around horses, and she used to fly.
Exploded.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, you had to teach her the right way. She just wanted to go out and, you know, kill herself and had nothing left at the end. But you taught her the right way, and that's how...
Yeah, well, she used to like to run like her father, you know, her old man, Damaska. She was by Damaska. Damaska was a horse that, if you put him in the lead, he used to stop. But if you take him back and make one run and let him run the last 3/8, he used to fly.
Would you say, Jacinto, were you better on the lead or were you better come from behind? Or would you say you didn't really have any preference?
Oh, well, I was pretty good in the lead with horses.
Yeah.
I was pretty lead. Until everybody got a help to me, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I used to steal a lot of races. And then all the riders got help to that. And they used to try to grab me by the throat real well in the race. So don't let me get away with it. So,
walking the dog out in front.
I could come from behind. I used to love come from behind.
I always love the rush you get when you turn for home and you're passing everyone left and right. That's what I loved. You get that rush, adrenaline.
Yeah. You know, I used to ride for Calumet Farm in the early 60s. They had some great horses. You used to take him back and wait to the last 3/16 and you let him run, and they used to fly go by. You can catch a horse in 2-3 lengths in the lead and 3-4 jumps. And it's a very good feeling, I tell you.
Joggy,
I have a horse by that.
Joggy Jacinto Vasquez is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, Jacinto, you mentioned Frank Whiteley, trained that filly we were talking about, and of course, trained a very special filly that you had the opportunity to ride, and let's talk about her before we have several minutes here before the break. So, Ruffian.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's like Marilyn Monroe from the racing industry. You know, she's never going to be forget.
No.
She was very special. She had things that not on the ready horse card. You know, you can place them anywhere and ask it to run for an 8 mile, bring it back, and you call him again, she take off again. She was very... There's no horses like that. The only horse I saw like that was Affirm. A Fun was a horse that liked to be close to the lead and finish. So,
how did you get the opportunity to ride her?
Well, I was riding for Mr. Wiley for many years. You know, for, well, I started riding for him in 1964, 63. And I was riding for him about 65, 66, then 67, 68, 69. I was riding most of all these horses.
What did you think when did you first work her in a particular morning? What did you first think when you first sat on her?
Oh, I got on her first time out. I took her to the gate, and she don't have no shoes. She was flat footed, so I broke them out of the gate with three other horses can run. Two horses can really run. One horse called I forgot the name of it. Borage, and another horse called I forgot the name of the bay horse. They could really run. Those horses, they was stake horses. But they had about 6 months off, and then Mr. White and Nissan Company sent those horses over there. And he told me, he said, don't let this filly run. He said, you just break out of there and stay with these horses off of the, just give them good work. That's all. Just let him run the last first 8 miles, then you take him back. So I went out of the gate and I took it back out of the gate over there, the first 8 miles. I took it back and I got to the half a mile point. She's running off on top of those horses. And I worked them right in the middle of the racetrack. She worked 5/8. I think she went in 5/8 around 59, 58 and change.
Wow.
And he came back and he said, you dumb shit. He said, I told you not to let this horse run. I said, I don't let it run. I said, she's coming up for me.
You had a stranglehold on her. She just wanted to go. 58, 59, just like that.
Yeah. So then I keep working her. And we had another filly called Lady Potion. Every time she worked, they put Lady Potions. They put Lady Potions. The workers, ruffian work, they used to put on Lady Potion. And when the Lady Potion worked, was ruffian. So we run Lady Potion about a week before the ruffian run. And she was 1-10 favored. And she finished a bad fourth. The public threw me garbage can and everything and that day.
Oh, my gosh.
And Willie Stevens win the race. And Willie Stevens come to me and say, hey, Jack, he said, that's your best horse you got. He said, I got one in the bottom better than this. How can you say this is your best horse? I said, Macy never tell him when he's going to have a sale. That's all I said to him. And about a week later, 10 days later, we had ruffian in the race. And Willie Stevens got the best filly in the race. So I'm in the number 12 post position, outside number 10 post position. And Woody's this spot, I think, is 8 post position. So I walked to Woody. I said, Woody, you see that filly over this ass? He said, yeah. I said, take a good looking because you're never going to get close to her in a race. He said, what do you mean? I said, just take a look. He said, she's a good-looking individual. I said, yes, take a look at her. So she run, and she run 103 flat first time out, winning by 15 lengths. Woody Stevens finished second.
He finished second. He got a good look of her ass. She beat a track record that day, didn't she?
Yeah, she broke the track record.
First time out.
Yeah.
Wow.
And she came back and ran about 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, and she equaled her own track record.
103.
Yeah.
103. How far did she win by in the...
She went about 10 lengths.
And that was what? That was the grade three?
The stake was a little stake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she just kept... Did you feel that she was just getting better or she just started great?
She just started great. And she... When she really turned out to be a really a horse, it was it's a three-year-old. When she came back, she ran one race. And after that, she's really improved. You can do anything with her. Before, she had a lot of speed.
So before she was mostly a speed horse, but then when she came back as a 3-year-old.
She used to carry the speed, you know.
Yeah.
You know, she run in 102 in Aquara, 5.5 in 102 and change.
Wow.
And then I finished, she's running Mama Spark. She's running Mama Spark. I don't ride him in Aquara. Jimbo Barzelli rode him. I was suspended for 7 days. And Jimbo Barzelli rode him. And then I rode her back in a sorority in Mama Spark. She win. She beat a real nice filly called Hot and Nasty. They thought it was a champion filly. And then she went to New York and run in a spinaway. And she run 3/4 mile in 108 flat. And Jimbo Brazilian never hit it.
Wow.
She pulled up faster than her coach run that day. The coach, they run a 6.5, I think, in 115. And she pulled up in 113 and change. She pulled up faster than the coast run.
She pulled up faster. Well, she broke the track record that day too at Saratoga.
Yeah, she broke the track record, yeah.
Gosh, 22.44.
You know, that's too, like today, people talking about good horses. You know, years back, good horses, they used to break track record or equal track record. For the past 30 years, you don't see a horse ever. This year, a horse broke a record in Saratoga. You take, for instance, American Pharoah, all these horses they run, Big Brown, all these horses, Barbaro. They just was horses, you know. They're just not good horses at the time. But if you run against the horses that run in the 60, they'd be in a lot of trouble because we had a lot of good horses then. You had Damaska, you had Dr. Fager. You know, Dr. Fager run 7/8 a mile in 120 when the racetrack was deep. Today, any bump run in 21, to 7/8 in 21, they used to break records. Dr. Fager run 7/8 a mile in 120 in New York with 138 pounds on it. Oh, no, I think 140. So today, they don't even put a weigh in the horses. Years back, they used to put weigh in horses, handicaps.
Jacinto, we will be right back. After this short commercial break, stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judges' choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
Find Tree Lane and Smile, and they are going at it, and they're stalked by Groovy as they come to the top of the stretch, and then it's 5 lengths to Bedside Promise Now, who swings to the outside. Taylor Special there toward the inside as the field turns for home. An astonishing half 43-3, and they're coming to the final furlong. Smile digs in. He's holding on to a short lead. Pine Tree Lane is right at his neck. Groovy is still third. A late run from bedside. Promise, and it's Smile. He's in front, and Smile is going to win it. And then it was Pine Tree Lane and Bedside Promise. Groovy, a disappointing fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal, and I am joined tonight by jockey Jacinto Vasquez. And we just heard the replay of the 1986 Breeders' Cup Sprint with Smile. And Jacinto, I would love to talk more about Smile here in a moment, but let's continue where we left off right before the break. And you were talking about horses when you rode in the 60s and the 70s, and how horses back then would just break track records left and right. And you don't really see that too often these days. Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know. You know, I don't like to say anything bad about anybody. But today is all different. You cannot train horses by computer or ideas. You got to train a horse, know how to train a horse. There's some good horsemen around, but today everybody live in a fast lane. We don't take care of the horses like it used to be. You know, horse come up with a problem, they used to stop them, send them home, bless them once or twice, and then they start very slow, bring those horses back. Today, you operate a horse and 45 days later, they start training a horse. How can you reach a heel in 45 days?
Yeah, it's way too fast.
Pin fire horse. They, years back, you pin fire horse, you bliss them after you pin fire. You put a bliss them on top of that pin fire. And they used to give them plenty of time to the swallow come down, and then it's walking by hand. Then you start walking on the share row on the tack. Then you take it to the racetrack when they lose all the scurf and everything. And they grow hair. You take them to the racetrack, start jogging, and start all over again. Today, people don't do those things.
Well, because
today is a quick fix.
And because of that, you don't see horses running for very long these days either.
Because, you know, horses like human beings, if you walk in a door and they hit you over the head with a goddamn broom, you're going to be shy. You don't want to do that. You know, pain is the same thing with the animals. That's why a lot of horses, they don't stand themselves like a shield because they have the problems. They don't give them enough time. You know, it's okay for the pain hooker to go an eighth of a mile with a horse. You can patch him up to go an eighth of a mile. But when you had to go run 40 miles an hour, three-quarters of a mile and an eighth, a mile and 16, that's a lot different.
Much, much different. Did you ever, speaking of horses with issues and things like that, did you ever think the ruffian was maybe not 100% sound, or did she just always...
Oh, she was sound. You know, they say... There's a thing that they probably people don't know. Ruffian, we was in a match race. There was a dog fight. So I come out of the gate. She don't broke that sharp. She never used to do. But take two, three jumps to really get together. And then I start carrying that horse out. I started pushing the horse out. And that probably they cost me. The horse broke his leg because I was putting pressure on a foolish player to take him out. And I was going to park him to the outside fence. There was a match race. I'm going to park him. I'm going to leave him outside fence because we're going in a straightaway, almost three-quarters of a mile straightaway. So I'm going to park him outside fence. That was my intention.
Yeah.
And I was forcing my horse to push that horse out, and that probably the pressure from the outside, though, and she put the legs and broke her leg. That's all.
So you think that it was because...
But no, she was 100% sound.
Yeah.
I was against the match race because you never get nothing out of a match race, two good animals. They only do just destroy two animals, two good animals. You destroy the two animals because you cannot go full speed going a mile and a quarter or a mile and an eighth or a flat mile. You can't do that to an animal.
No.
You know, quarter horse is okay, but how far the quarter horses run in full blast?
Right.
200 yards?
Exactly.
150 yards?
No distance.
You know, it's
whatsoever.
A lot different with a thoroughbred. When you start running a horse, especially a young horse like Ruffian and Foolish Pleasure, gonna fly mile. You're gonna go 21:44, gonna mile and a quarter. How far are they gonna go? You know, sooner or later something's gonna happen. Most of the time, if there's nothing happen, you break a horse's heart and then don't be any good after that race. Tell me which horse had ever win after a match race. Okay. They win it. What had done after the match race?
Can't think of any. Can't think of
anyone. They haven't even done nothing.
Yeah.
And people think, oh, a match race. Oh, okay. It's for what? Listen, they don't waste no reason to have a match race with Ruffian, because Ruffian was a filly. When she runs, she's gonna have the clubhouse and the grandstand full of people because they're gonna come to see her. You know, she turned down to be a horse that belonged to the people. She was very attractive to everybody. And you don't need no goddamn match race. I told that to Mr. Phipps when they made it. I said, "Well, you guys got me in." You guys got me between the two rocks. I said, I ride both horses. I was riding both horses. I was riding Foolish Pleasure and I was riding Ruffian. They want me to pay. I said, to make a choice, it's not hard to make a choice. But to me, destroy two good horses like this, it's not a, I don't think it's a good idea. Well, we got to change the public, bring public. And I say, if you roughly run against all the horses over here, against the male, I said, then you're going to have the same amount of people in a clubhouse and in a grandstand that it is a match race. Oh, we're going to make a big thing like this, Papa. I said, but you justify two good horses for one day? I said, I think you guys are an idiot. That's the exact word I said to Danny Phipps and the rest of the guys and Dreyfus. They don't like the way I said it, but I did say it.
Well, and you were right. Unfortunately, of course, we all know the horrific ending to that match race. And what was going through your head in that moment? Do you think it was just because you were carrying Foolish Pleasure out, or did she? Some people say she saw geese in the infield and spooked.
No, because I was carrying Foolish Pleasure out. That's all.
Yeah.
And Baez are trying to push me back in. That's all. I'm pushing him out, and I had more horses than him anyhow. My horse was, you know, she weighed 1,300 pounds. Foolish Pleasure weighed 900 pounds.
Well, and she was tough to even pull up at that point.
Oh, yeah, she was tough still.
She didn't want to stop. Yeah. And tell our audience, of course, she was sent to the hospital to get surgery, and tell our audience the outcome of all that.
Well, you know, she run and her broken, you know, she broke the pasture between the foot and the ankle. She broke that bone. And then she run on a quarter of a mile, took me a quarter of a mile to pull him up. And she run in that lake like that. And when I pull him up, she shattered the whole thing above the ankle. Then only no piece, just pieces of bone only, above the ankle. She shattered everything out. And when they brought her back, they put an air boots on, and she was lame. And some doctor said, oh, we can do this, we can do that. How the hell are you going to repair a horse's leg like that? They lost by 4 inches the bone. Mm. The whole ankle was destroyed. The whole pasture was destroyed. They never could. They never should have even tried to save the filly. They should have just destroyed her right away. But, you know, they went over there to they put him in an anesthesia, and they operated him. And when she come out of the anesthesia, she threw a fit, and she snapped her leg wide open again. And then they had to put her down. But they never. It's like Barbaro. You know, Barbaro should have been put down right away because they only go, dude, you suffer.
Yeah.
You're going to get laminitis and a horse like that and everything. You cannot, when a horse has got those kind of fractions, you can't repair horses like that because they're going to stand for a while, for 1 or 2, 3 months because the fitness they got, I mean, they survive because of that. but not because, and if long gone, they're going to be gone because they wind up with pneumonitis or something else, and they're going to die. They're going to have to just put them down. It's no sense of trying to save a horse like that with a traction like that.
Well, Jacinta, let's go on to a more cheerful note after that that sad, sad story. But she was just, what a wonderful, wonderful filly, the great ruffian. But now, let's talk about another wonderful filly you had the opportunity to ride, Genuine Risk.
Well, she was a entirely different horse than ruffian, you know. You had to place in a race and make the right move, and she gave you a good run. She got a good 5.16 on my run, and... But she was a good filly, you know, and at that time, he could beat anybody, you know. She beat everybody in the Derby, and after that, every horse that beat her in the Preakness and the Belmont, the horses, fresh horses beat her. Not the same horses that beat her, they beat in the Derby.
Mm.
You know, she's accomplished a big thing, you know. Tell me how many fillies run the Triple Crown, finish second, win the one and finish second and the rest of them.
It's very impressive.
You know,
very impressive.
You know, that filly win the Derby. What's her name? The Lucas filly.
Winning Colors?
Winning Colors. If you ride that day, I'm not knocking that day, I don't knock in De La Husse. But I'm used to know those horses very well. If you ride what's his name, 49er or Recent Star, I win the Derby because, you listen, when I turn for home, she never going to be get away from me. Somebody else probably could have won, but not her. She never could have beat me. You know, they're letting set the pace for our own sale. They're letting get away from them in the quarter pole, and nobody do nothing. If it's me, I'll be in top of her. Backside right from the beginning, turning for home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and of course, you did win the 1980 Kentucky Derby with Genuine Risk. And describe the race. How'd you make that happen?
Well, I moved a little quick, but I trying to avoid some problems around the turns. Some horses got shut off, and I don't want to get shut off around the 3-8 post. So I move out, and she got in gear with me, and I just eased him out, and I'm a little quicker than I want to, but that make me win the race. You know, that's because I don't got no problem. Then I got a wave and a stretch, and she run a big race.
Was she a difficult horse to ride?
No, she don't was difficult. You can place in the beginning any place you want, but you just said when you make a move, you got to be in the clear, you know, look up some room to. And she run inside or outside. But I was around the turn, gunt in the turn, the horse got shut off inside, and they're trying to go out. And I was laying fourth at that time. So I get them up to avoid that problem, and I wound up laying second over there, third, right behind the leaders. But I had plenty of horses.
And then, of course, she was second in the Preakness and second in the Belmont. And you mentioned that...
Yeah, Cordero mugged me in that race. They should have been disqualified, you know. Cordero probably rode the best horse that day because, listen, he took me out to the clubhouse and came back and he still win by 4 or 5 lengths. You know, he discouraged my filly because she carried me out. But I don't win by him because I don't have enough horse to go by. That's all.
Right.
You know, people don't realize that. You know, you rode races. You know, you get KRL because you don't have enough horse to go out, to go buy a horse.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, people make excuses when they get beat. Oh, I got carry out. If that horse could have been good enough to go buy those horses, he never been carry out.
You wouldn't have been there.
Huh?
You wouldn't have been stuck there. You would have gone past.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, right.
You would have been past. But when you don't have enough horse to go buy, they're going to do what they want with you. And that's all.
Okay. You know, completely agree. And Angel Cordero, he was riding a fresh horse that day.
Yeah, they rode a fresh horse, and he beat me. So he mugged me. He should have been disqualified. But the blind stewards in Maryland, they thought that because it's a Preakness, they don't disqualify the horse.
Now, do you think, of course, we've heard that other people in the industry share this opinion, but do you think that the Triple Crown should be limited to horses who have run in every leg? of the Triple Crown. Only horses who run in the Derby should run in the Preakness. Only horses who've run in the Preakness should run in the Belmont. Is that, do you think?
We got a problem. We're in a country that's a free society, you know. We don't have no rules over here. Everybody can do their thing. And that's why that's happened. But if they ever come up with their rules, I think they're going to be good rules. Have 20 horses for the Derby. Then after that, you go to the Preakness, whoever want to make it, and then the Belmont. You know, because it's not as good idea, you know, somebody sit with a gun loaded and a bellman come and knock their head off, and after you've been through all of hard time. This is, they got some sense in many ways. I think if they come up with a rule, everybody, all the breeders and people on horses agree, be a good idea, because, you know, most of the horses that get beaten in the Triple Crown, they're fresh horses beaten. Horses that never made the Derby or the Preakness. And that's what happened. And it's a hard campaign.
It's very, very tough. Very tough. Yeah. Jockey Jacinto Vasquez is joining me tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jacinto, this time is flying, and before we run out of time, I really want to hear about you beat Secretariat 3 times.
Yeah, well, the first time was accidentally. I tried they do something to him, but I don't want to do it as bad as it happened, you know. My horse completely broke to the inside, and I eliminate him and another horse. I was number 3 first position, or 4, I forgot. And I run him right to the fence with. My horse threw the head in the air, and I couldn't really control him. And cost him the race. He wound up last and came around and finished fourth. He run a big race.
So that was bad.
And then I beat him in a Wood Memorial. Then I beat him in Saratoga. And Saratoga was a thing like a plan. You know, I want him to come inside of me. I don't want him outside of me. When I turned in the box, I went to the middle of the racetrack. I make him, he come inside of me. So I got him inside of me. I know he don't run that good inside of horses. So I got the best of it that day. But I don't think he was himself that day. But I'm glad he did.
That was, of course, in the Whitney. You were aboard Onion. And when you caught him inside, that was exactly what you wanted to have happen. When he went inside, did you put extra pressure on him? Did you have
a little pressure, and I thought talking to him, I said, please, Turka, don't leave me. Stay with me. Don't beat me too far. Stay with me. And I keep talking to him, and I distract him a little bit, and he cursed me out after the race, but I took a picture.
You got your picture taken. Most definitely. And in the wood with Angel Light. How did that happen exactly? Did you do the same kind of strategy, get him inside?
No, well, that day he was trapped inside all the way in the backside. And then when he got loose around the 5-16 pole, the race was over anyhow. I was in front when the day started running. Shame was laying second. And when he got away, he run up, that day he don't run his race either, I tell you. He just don't run his race. So I beat him.
You mentioned talking smack in the race, in the Whitney. Did you do that a lot, Jacinto? Did you do that when you were riding?
Oh, I used to do it a lot. I used to do a lot to distract the jock. I used to call him everything, and I said a lot of stupid things. So, you know, they used to get him mad. I used to get the damn jockeys out of concentration, you know. And some of them used to curse me out and everything, but I used to do it all the time.
Never.
I learned that from Shoemaker, you know. I learned that from Shoemaker. Shoemaker used to come to you around 3 April. Hey, Jack, how much grip you got? You got any grips? Yeah, and talking to you, you know, to distract you. What the hell you was doing? But I learned that thing for all my early years. Then I used to use him. The guy I couldn't talk to in the race was Jerry Bailey. Every time I start talking to him, oh, shut up, I don't talk to me. That's my used to say that.
Did they ever come back in the room and?
Yeah. One time, you know, God Patterson, he's dead now. I hope he's rest in peace. He just got married. He got married to a beautiful girl. So he ride a filly called Somish Condom. Big, good-looking filly, real good filly. She never been beat. So I ride another horse, and I came on at 3-8-4. Ryan from outside, and I got Ryan top of him. And I said to him, I said, hey, Gart, I want your wife. She's so nice. I want to do this to your wife. I want to do this to the... And he keeps trying to hit me in my foot with a whip. And I keep talking to him, and I give it, and I took all the way home, and I beat him in my head. After the race, he want to fight me. But I don't want to fight him. He was my friend, and I just laughed, and everybody was laughing. He said, what do you say to him? I said, well, I just told him I want his wife. I want to make love to his wife and this and that. And he got mad in the race. But I beat him.
Can't blame him for wanting to fight you afterwards, but you beat him. Mm-hmm. You got the job done. Yeah. That's all that matters. That's too funny. Well, Jacinto, I want to bring up something that, is maybe very frustrating for you. The year suspension you had to serve, and that was a big controversy. I guess that was back in the 80s. And tell us what happened in the story behind that.
Well, the story behind that, I said something to a jock one time for his benefit, and that's, the dumb son of Mitchie went in and he threw me under the bus for no reason.
Yeah.
Adam was in the clan fixing races. They was fixing races. And I had to be the scapegoat for all the stuff. Danny Fitz used to know that they were fixing races for years all around there. I never was got in a clan race. I was riding the best horses in New York, and I was riding... the best horses for Frank Wiley, the Green Tree Stable, Johnny Rada, Mystic, the King Ranch, and Birch, and all those people. How can I gonna do that thing to those people? I ride the best horse. And besides, in those years, there was 5, 6, 7 horse field. You can't be holding a horse in a 5 horse field.
No.
You get in trouble. You know, I was winning more races than anybody. I wound up leading riders that year around this place. Almost every place. And they're going to accuse me that I was holding horses? You know? I don't was holding horses. Then they said that I was a bad man and all of baloney. They put me as a scapegoat because I don't want to be a stew pigeon, you know?
Yeah.
If I could have been... I wish that Con Erico could have speak. He was the one that was fixing the races. I wish he could have speak. He could have put the whole Jackson in jail. The whole Jackson. No, he went to jail, keep his mouth shut. And then the racing commission want to do something and pick me and Mike Venetia. You know why? Because we're trying to unionize the riders. We're trying to ride, affiliate with the unions. And Danny Fitt was against that. Excuse me. Danny Fitt was against the unionize with the affiliate with the unions. He said, oh, those people said they're bad, they're crooks, they're this, you can't do that. But we should have done it because we told them. We told Jackie Gill, I said, listen, now it's television. They're going to come a lot of things, new things, off-track betting. And we should get a piece of that for the jockeys. No, we don't got nothing. You know why? Because the dumb riders, nobody stayed behind us. Mm. And they throw us under the bus. So we never got nothing. We had a television show in New York. They used to call it the race of the week. It was making close to $1 million a show. And we don't got nothing. We never got nothing out of that. And he was paying nothing to the people that was working in there. Benefit. Then when I brought that thing to the table, I said, you got a show over here that's making close to $1 million in commercial, and you don't give nothing back to the horseman or to the jockeys or the jockey guild. You know what he did? He canceled the show. He canceled the show.
Wow. Well, that's one way to stop
that. There's a lot of things was behind in New York, and Danny Phipps trying to keep the sport a king. But he was a sore hypocrite. You know what he did? He was against laces, the wrong horses and laces in New York, but he used to send horses across the river to Mama Spark and run some sandwiches and Lacey. I'll show you how hypocrite that sandwich was.
Jacinto,
excuse my language, but I just
you are good. You are good. But I got to tell you, we have 2 minutes left, and I want to talk about one more thing really quickly before we have to go. You were inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1998. And yeah. That had to be such a wonderful, surreal experience to be standing up there on the podium and looking back over your entire career, coming from Panama, working in the rice fields, and then accomplishing everything that you did. What was going through your mind in that time?
Oh, nothing. I was nominated 11 times.
11 times?
For that thing. 11 times. Wow. And I never got over there. I don't think the people that vote me, the guy in the, I think the cousin, the job, the guy was the head of the Hall of Fame in New York, because he put me in, because they don't have no jocks that year to put in, because they don't have enough votes or whatever. So he put me in. I went over there. I started boycotting, not to go and say anything, but I went over there to thank the horsemen. They appreciate they was behind me all our life, and they gave me a break to be successful as I was. Without the horsemen, you can't do that. The trainers and owners. That's why I went to the Hall of Fame. But the Hall of Fame is a bunch of baloney, you know? I tried to put Milo Valenzuela over there for 10 years, and they don't want it because some of the newspapers, they vote for that thing. They said Milo Valenzuela was a drunk. So finally, I called a bunch of newspapers. I told them, I said, you've got the Hall of Fame full of hopheads, and you're going to tell me that you can't put Milo Valenzuela in there because he used to be a drunk? He used to write better than a lot of those guys that you put in there when he was drunk. Well, you know, it's a lot of political baloney.
Well, Jacinto, I am so sorry, but we have run all out of time. It has been a pleasure having you here on the show, Jacinto. Wishing you all the best. Thank you so much.
All right. See you later. Call me back and see the result.
All right.
If they like it or not.
Oh, they'll love it. They'll love it. Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Now be sure to join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.